You're listening to
Hello and welcome to Cattails. They say that if you can remember the 60s, then you weren't really there. Now, if you can remember the 70s, then you'll be glad that you were there. Many would agree that the 70s was the most memorable decade in music history, not least because of the impact of glam rock and its influence on later musicians, and there's no doubt that one of the legendary bands of that time was Slade. I was very lucky to be able to spend an afternoon with guitarist Dave Hill, who is no doubt one of the most genuine men in the music industry, and he's definitely still feeling the noise. This is The One with Dave Hill.
I've got questions for you, Dave.
Shall I just follow up?
Yeah, no, laugh. Thank God for that.
That's an easy part.
Now, 3 years' time, it's a big anniversary, isn't it?
I reckon it is, yeah.
So, how does that fit? What's the secret of your success, put it that way?
I think if I knew that, we'd probably be managers or something. I don't think there was any secret. I think some people say, I want to be famous, or I want to be rich, or I want to be a lot of things. And you say a lot of things when you're young. But when I was young, and I was probably 14 or 15, the idea of being a famous pop star didn't come into it. It was more about a guitar playing music with a mate on my estate, which is a council estate it was. And it was like, that was enough. Mm. And we weren't, I wouldn't say we didn't have dreams, but it was just like, you know, you've got Elvis in the charts, you've got Buddy Holly in the charts, you've got country and western in the charts in those days, before rock came in.
Yeah.
And that's what we were listening to, and we were learning bits and bobs of songs, which were, you know, you get a piece of music, sheet music, used to get it, you know, and look up the chords, and that's what we did. So really there was no full plan. It was a bit like, and then I left school and I got a job. And in those days it was called a real job. Whereas being in a group wasn't a real job. I went to work for a firm for 3 years and I started to grow my hair and the Beatles made it. And it was this 1963, I think. And I said to me dad, I really like to go professional. I wasn't very good at this job. So I was given the opportunity. So in other words, I packed up the job. I was also doing very well. And I went, I grew my hair, and the Beatles were in the charts. I'll tell you what, I couldn't think of a better time to grow. This is long before I made it.
Yeah.
Making it's different, but being in that time, being in a band, being travelling and all the rest of it, it's still the same now. Mm. And the principle behind that was, it wasn't about the money, although you had to earn money to live.
Yeah.
Me living with your mum and dad, it wasn't such a problem. You didn't pay rent, or I didn't half the time anyway. And you had a girlfriend, but then met girls up and down the country, you know. So to me, being in the band, growing your hair was great. And I think for me, I can't think, except for obviously the wonderful experiences I've had being successful, that it was never about fame and fortune.
Right.
Except that both of those things, I wouldn't say fortune, but certainly fame. Mm. I've been famous now, or at least known, for as long as you just said.
Yeah.
And people say, oh, what's it like being famous? And I don't really think about it, you see, because I get up in the morning, I go for a walk, I go and get the newspaper down the local newspaper shop, and I see people walking their dogs, and they all know me, but they ain't going to be bothering me. They just go, morning, Dave,
and they
carry on, because they know I'm that guy, but it's still got a normal life. I don't live in the country somewhere or isolate myself. So I feel like just one of yourselves, really, in a sense that this is what I do, you're doing what you're doing, and you're taking photographs.
Yeah.
And I see there is no written document to state this is how it's going to be, you'll make it here and you'll do this. Because at the time that we grew, and the things that we were doing, it was all new. There wasn't even any coloured television when I first became successful. It was all black and white. So when I was first successful, colour just started to come in, which was perfect for me.
Perfect for you and your clothes. Come on, you're flamboyant.
I think that was a very strong principle in the impact those things had.
Yeah, sure.
Because people were going, Oh, this is like going to the cinema when you see films.
Yes, yeah,
you know?
Of course.
Now I see these glitzy garments. Because everything from the 60s,
yeah.
No matter what you wore, it was it was black and white.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
I think it was dark.
You might have, you got a black jacket on, that would be okay. If you got some silver trousers on, that would be okay. But certain colour things, you know, and makeup and whatnot, was meshed out with the black and white. Which, in a way, is a bit of an art form, black and white now. Whereas opposed to colour. And what we've got now with HD and everything is almost like too much ready quality and it's taken away probably some of the bit of a mystery of the kind of inflections of old pictures that actually created an art form, you know.
Absolutely.
Whereas we're into clarity now. Like, you know, you think, well, you know, every time Apple upgrades the iPhone or upgrade your thing, you think, well, how much better can it get than it actually is right now, you know? How much do I need to see? But the difference between the time of being in a group now and being in a group when I was is the actual, what you call, I've done my time. An axe now won't. So the get-rich-quick teams that we see and the idea of getting on, I don't know, reality shows and X Factors, I know that it's entertainment and it can be amusing. It also can be quite damaging that anybody that probably, you know, could be on a show like that might have potential talent but actually might lose that show, could actually knock them about so they don't pursue it, you see.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
So, in other words, I can understand when you're young thinking, I'll get on there, I'll do this, I'll become famous, I'll get as much as I can, I'll get out. Whereas for me, it's like, how long is this tour? Well, it's been a lifetime, really. And I think I'm fortunate because I've added records when music meant more than anything else. You see, a lot of people don't think about that, but when people were buying vinyl and the ritual of all that, there wasn't Xboxes and there weren't lots of things to play with. Mostly it was make your own fun outdoors or buy records. And Elvis and Cliff Richard and the Shadows and all those people domineered the music field. And we all just got into that. And you fell in love with your first girl through music. You felt a part of something. There was a fashion, there was a whole thing. But now it's like, you know, you could be an individual and you could be in a put together band within 6 months. Yeah, and you've got a modicum of talent. Mm. And you might have a crack at something. Mm. And you might actually score.
You might.
Yeah, it's like buying a ticket and say you can win that car for a quid.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, you might. But then again, it's not like working for it. So.
No. So in your time then, when you really made it big then, let's go back to the time when, you know, it's black and white, colour TV comes in, gives you the opportunity for all this flamboyance and everything, and you grabbed it, didn't you?
Yeah, I did, yeah.
What sort of motivated you? Because at the time, yes, there was glam rock coming in and it was all, you know, started to colour up, as it were, but you're kind of a bit of a trailblazer there.
Yeah, well, I think there was a lot going on with me before I made it, so I was experimenting anyway, and I used to fiddle around with clothes at home. So.
Right.
Only because what I'd learnt from playing pubs and things is that when you went on stage, you had to look different from the people who were actually in there. You know, the guy who was in the audience or the girl who was in the audience had something to look at and something to be amused by, as well as being playing serious stuff. And I used to experiment with a reaction.
Right.
And what I termed as, I used to try costumes out. I used to walk through town or go in Woolworths, see if anybody looked at me.
Right.
And give me the impression, oh, this might work, you know.
Yeah.
And I'd do things like that. When I wore something on stage, which it all started, funny enough, with a girl's blouse. Oh, that's actually weird. It's just I was in a shop and there was this yellowy, shiny blouse, got a big bow in it.
Yeah.
And I was looking at it thinking, but that'll look really good on stage, you know, but I know it's a girl's blouse. So I just bought it, and then I put it on in the dressing room, and nobody could believe I was going to wear it. So I said, I just love the colour, so I've got this shiny thing on. I went on stage, and I got those people sort of smiling, and there was a reaction. And anyway, one of my mates who was there, he said, flipping hell, he says, what was that you got on? He says, really looks good, that does. So it's some sort of shirt. I says, no, it's a blouse. And I just knew, you see, what people say out the front is not actually true. And I mean, mostly the clothes that I experimented with, what's that word, androgynous?
Yeah.
Well, it could be worn by a female, it could be worn by a male. And because I came up at a time when, you know, Bowie came along and people were interacting with both sides of the coin. I mean, Mark Bolan was a classic example of a really great-looking pop star that got curly hair, and it could be a female in one way. It was a mixture. And Mark was quite an influence on me because he was happening before me, and him and Mickey Finn were making wonderful pictures, you know. And his little starry bits was all very post-hippie, cosmic. It was very much a time of, you know, when we all went through that period with the Beatles where it was, you know, everybody loving each other and it was all flower power. And it all come from Mazer.
Right.
Because we'd been through that. But the idea of flower power was, it was a great idea, except the drugs ruined it. The drugs killed it. But the idea behind it was fantastic.
It was good.
And we used to experiment with all that. And I think from the flower power, which was colourful, and the kind of strange colours they were using in lights. Imagine me having all that knowledge and then putting it into...
Right.
So it was natural. Because also people say, oh, but you're embarrassed about what you wore. And I said, no, I'm not.
No.
I said, because I know that people mention that stuff. Oh, you know, those costumes or something or other that you wore. And it wasn't... I know that it's not all about the costumes. It's about the music.
Absolutely.
And that's what people are coming to hear tonight.
That's right.
It's about the time. Absolutely. And it's very important... But the iconic image was very much part of the fun.
Yeah, that you had at the time.
Yeah.
So it is all about...
I mean, I met one of Bucks Fizz, do you know? I don't know if you remember Bucks Fizz, but there's a girl called Jay in them. And she said to me, she said, I know you were famous and all that. She said, but I was 11 years of age and the reason I tuned in to watch Top of the Pops when you were on to see what you were every
what
time.
It's about.
And it was just part of the deal, you know?
Yeah, sure.
It's like watching Fred Astaire in his new movie, waiting for him to do a new dance.
Well, that's right. You'd feel cheated if you didn't get it, wouldn't you?
Yeah, you would. If you don't tap, it's not a British thing. Because you're waiting for him to sing or tap or do something, or dance with Ginger Rogers. Because that was the time. And it's not that it's just cooked up in 5 minutes.
No.
A lot of the things I wore were thought about.
Of course.
In fact, I had two people working for me as well.
Wow.
And
wow.
I used to give them ideas.
Did you?
Well, I went to Japan and I said I want something like a Japanese glam rock kimono. So,
right.
So they did me one.
Wow.
And it worked.
Terrific.
It was just like, I'm going there.
Yeah.
How can we be a little bit Japanese?
Yeah, yeah.
But make it glamour?
Yeah, absolutely.
So I went to Tokyo and I was wearing this... Strange looking. Might not be termed as a commander, but it was an idea.
But it was, a nod to it.
Yeah, and it's... I used to get this buzz, you know, I used to go to London. So I was living with Mum and Dad when I had at least well into my first couple of number ones. I was still there.
Yeah, sure.
And then I used to go to London, I used to go to Kensington Market. And funny enough, Freddie Mercury was working in there, selling T-shirts.
Brilliant.
Yeah, I didn't know him though, but he was in there.
Right.
And there were people like Freddie in there, very creative, very arty. He used to go there and he used to get all these kind of ideas, you know. I used to say, oh, regular black long leather coat you got there, can you make that in silver? Oh, yeah. For you, we can make anything then.
Terrific.
Yeah, I think that'll look really good. And there was this guy, he used to have these platform shoes with one platform on them. And I was looking at him thinking, could you put two on there? And the rest is history. That's how,
I know how you managed
then
to
walk
in those
three,
things.
And then four. and then to the point where I couldn't walk.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
You know, similarly, like, my God, you know.
Is it true that you said to Jim Lee, you write them, I'll
sell them?
That's true a true story. Quote. Is that a true quote?
So well, I used to go into Top Pop's dressing room. It was not dissimilar to this sort of dressing room, right? So there'd be a toilet over there. I used to go in there. And the toilet probably had mirrors in, and I used to put all the stuff on. And nobody knew what I was going to wear. A bit like, you know, jumping out the cracker.
Yeah.
You know, cracker box.
Excellent.
And I used to be in there, and they were all waiting for me to come out. So.
Oh,
and my manager in particular, Chess Chandler, who's also been famous.
Yeah.
Right? It was always like, you know, what's he got?
Oh,
and
no.
Then I come out, and they're just flipping. They'll be,
da-da!
Oh, yeah. Well, my manager got it right away. He was amazing, man. You know, wasn't he? Jim would probably be a little bit more, you're not going to wear that, are you? Oh, yeah, I am. You know what I mean? It was a bit like that.
And
I just said to him that one day, I said, I'll tell you what, you write them and I'll sell them.
I love it.
And then I've become a bit of a thing.
Brilliant.
The point is, I'm playing on those records, on part of the music of those records. But, you know, there's a lot to be said for a wrapping around a certain piece of chocolate, isn't there?
Absolutely.
You know, there's sometimes what draws you to some to actually look what's inside. It's a, the thing with the music, if it wasn't good, no amount of good packaging will sell it. We know that. Top of the Pops can sell something, yeah. Right? If you're bad on Top of the Pops, it can drop, right? Mm. But there's one thing you can't lie about is radio. When your record's played, it's got to be good.
That's right.
And as were.
Yeah.
And I'm very proud of our songs because there's not one of them that I'm embarrassed about.
Excellent.
And every one I play, now I've been doing it 40 odd years, yeah. Is that I know in myself what it's all about.
Of course.
In a sense of memories and a special time and a time when most people that know this time know that people now are not having that sort of time.
Absolutely.
And they know that.
Yeah.
Because they'll go, oh, I mean, some people might say, there's a lot of rubbish about. Well, there's always been a lot of rubbish about.
Yeah.
But there is some good stuff about. You've got people like Adele, you know, that come along and wipe the floor.
Yeah.
Every so often, it's quite encouraging.
Yeah.
And then you get a lot of dross. You get a lot of like, oh, that worked. Let's try and get another version. Mm. And you're always going to get. And there's a lot of manipulative money-making, money-spinning. And the nonsense that goes on in some of those reality shows, you know, as if, well, sometimes it's more about the guests than you know the judges, and it's about the you know who's arguing with who,
yeah.
And it becomes entertainment. So you might as well call it karaoke. You know, that's what it's like, isn't it?
Right.
I mean, you might get somebody remarkable on there. I'm not saying you wouldn't. I mean, Susan Ball came out of nowhere. You probably look at her thinking, oh, the ex
is.
But the voice.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? It wasn't about some glamour model, was it? But the thing is, true talent, and there's a lot of talented people in our country who will never make it. You know, it just, but they're not. Some people are not interested in making it. They're interested in playing down pubs, just enjoying doing that, but they don't want to get involved. I tell you, it was like that. Do you know Eva Cassidy?
Yeah.
Now, she used to play in this pub in America, you know.
Mm.
And she got this flipping fantastic...
fantastic
I mean, this
voice.
Natural voice that she
beautiful.
Got. And none of us had ever heard of her until she died. Until Teddy Wogan was playing one of the tracks.
Yeah, that's right.
Then suddenly it was like, how come we never heard of this girl?
Oh, no.
You know. And I guess that from what I've read about her, she was never into the fame. And I think, really, sometimes... although I've been famous and enjoyed it, I can sort of understand that as well. In a sense that you can be complete or happy in yourself without the adulation, you know. And I mean, albeit I can say that because I've already done it.
Yeah.
So somebody's been, somebody you've done it, Dave, so you can say that. But I can also view it in a sense of what fame's like. Because there are times when fame is hard, really hard.
So what kind of things would you...
Well, one of the hardest aspects is that most fame, most people who've had a run like we did, will reach a point where the audience starts to decline. Everybody, no matter who, goes through that. When something else comes along and there is a new breed of people taking that one on. So you say, for instance, you've got the 70s, then the 80s come along with a lot of keyboard people, you know? A lot of sort of neuromantics and this and that was going on, you know. So, and then punk came along and sort of kicked it about. And it wasn't bad, actually, some of that. And, you know, Stranglers and people like that. Some good stuff there. And it also made us think about things. But you can go through a period where, oh, it's all about this now, you know. And there was a period where it was all about us.
That's right.
You know.
So did that kind of hit hard? Is it like, oh, are we losing it? And you don't know what the future's going to hold, and therefore it makes you feel vulnerable? And or was it, you know, actually, I'm quite pleased.
The only thing that makes you feel vulnerable is fear.
Hmm.
And I think everybody can fear losing something, you know.
Yeah.
Whether it's your house, your garden, or something, or I don't know. As people, we tend to clutch on to things and try and get secure with things, you know. And it's not like I'm trying to say I've got the answers, but... The more you try and hang on, the better you are to let go. And sometimes the letting go can create change. Change can be... When you're trying to hang on to what we got, it wasn't... You couldn't hang on to it, you see.
Yeah.
It had been...
It's a time.
But now, it's just... Now it's sweet. It has a kind of... I don't have to think about my next hit record. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I haven't got the pressure of being involved in that. I'm still under... being demanded upon to to do interviews, to do television and things like that. People are interested
in
that time.
Yeah.
But the songs are still from that time.
Yes.
So, they have an enduring thing about them.
So do you feel frustrated that you are expected to still play the singles? You know, hits when you know you're out tonight. Does it get, you know, oh, why don't they ever ask
what
about a great album track?
Yeah, an album track, some artists, they do what you call the album, and they do a thing called they're doing the album.
Yeah.
So you could pick one of Slade's particular albums,
yes,
and that's all you'd play. That wouldn't suit this purpose, because this purpose, it's like you couldn't possibly not finish with Merry Christmas, is it?
No,
you'd do them out of it, wouldn't you?
Yeah.
No, I wouldn't.
Does it feel
anyway.
A bit of a curse, though, sometimes?
Yeah, I mean, some people just come to hear that one.
But if they go away, they're happy.
But abroad, it's a little bit different.
Is that right?
Abroad, you might... I'll go to Russia and they go, oh, yeah, I know about it, but what about that one, you know?
Right.
I said, well, that wasn't it. Oh, it was here.
And they
have odd tracks.
Oh, right.
And you think, oh, we've never played it.
You know,
because we don't normally do that one. Because that was a flop, you see.
Yeah.
That's why we don't do it.
Yeah, yeah, sure.
But in Russia, it wasn't.
Hmm.
See, abroad, it's not so fashion conscious as Britain. Because Britain's into what's in, you know, the daily tabloids or who's doing what, news doing so-and-so, you know, whatever is going on. Everything's so focused on dross in our country, you know.
Yeah.
Stuff appears in the papers abroad and it'll be something else.
Yeah.
And they don't seem to be so caught up in, if you're not currently in the papers, what are you? It's more about the past, you know, or...
Yeah, so it's so different abroad, isn't it?
Yeah. And it does take... I mean, years ago, you don't mind the pressure because you know that your last hit record.
Yeah.
And when's the next one? And that's what it's like, and that's what it was like for 4 years. But it's different when you're sort of early 20s and going through that than
absolutely.
Being... But it was... I'm not saying I wouldn't like to do something new. The way things are sold out and the whole philosophy... It's not the same. No one... It's not like there's a gathering of people with their vinyl going around to each other's house and putting it on.
No.
And those little record players and all the what they used to use years ago. And then all going, have you heard this one? Have you... Well, you've got to listen to the album because you'll get into it, man, and all that. It's what it was like.
Absolutely.
Now it's a bit like... I mean, I've seen it with my son, you know. They'll go and they'll access an album as you can download it. And they play 10 seconds from each track. And it's a bit like, how can you tell from 10 seconds of each track which one you like? It's just like, oh, well, oh yeah.
So it's download all on that hook, isn't
it? 99p. Yeah.
It's done, yeah.
Not several quid, but 99p. And it's a bit like really getting involved in what could really be what the artists are all about. And yet again, there are certain artists which do come out of this country, which do have... You know, people get into the album.
Yeah.
I mean, what's his name? James Blunt, is it? He had a period where it's the album in it, you know. Was it Back to Bedlam, was it? When he became successful, I went to see him. And he'd gone from being a pub singer to a mega worldwide selling album.
Yeah.
And then you got Adele, who I'd never heard of. And you think, well, here's a person with this amazing voice,
yeah,
but I've never heard of her.
Yeah.
And then 21 comes out. I remember buying it, thinking, this is pretty great.
Yes,
I've never heard of it as good as this.
Yeah.
For years.
So if you had to choose a Slade track, then, of one of your favourites, what would you say is the track you're most proud of?
Probably one of the better songs is called How Does It Feel? And How Does It Feel was a theme track to a film which was called Slade in Flame. It's a rather sort of mature track. And Alan Freeman, who was at that time doing a Saturday classic rock show, you know, and Queen's album was out, and he said to us, well, I've heard that, How Does It Feel? He said, I'll be looking forward to the album.
Oh.
And we didn't follow it through to do an album like that.
Right.
Because we kind of were capable of taking it further, but we felt short on it. And other things... happened. Because we were known for a certain kind of sound, a certain kind of singer, and then we'd done something like that, which wasn't one of our bigger hits. But I picked that as a song that doesn't date, like the Christmas song doesn't date, because the lyrics look to the future in a way, and How Does It Feel like that. I'd picked that as a track I particularly like, and yet to understand Slade, you'd pick Come and Feel the Noise. That's what you'd do.
Yeah.
I'd pick that because that's what. An overall theme of what it's about.
Are you doing it this evening?
And I'll do that, yeah. Mm. Yeah. Some of you know do that because that was the most covered slide song by other artists, you say. Oasis, Quiet Riot in America, had a number one. I mean, we didn't have a hit with it at all in America, but Quiet Riot.
Well, America was a hard place to crack for you guys, wasn't it, really?
It was more cracking us than we were cracking it.
Do you feel cheated by that?
Yeah. Yeah. I think something didn't seem right. And Elton John came to see us once. And he was sitting on the side of the stage, and he was just cracking a big time, and he was watching us. Mm. And he'd made it in America.
Yeah.
And he watched us. He said, I can't understand why you haven't made it in America. And I can only say that it was a struggle all the time. Every time we went, there was this kind of apprehension about whatever was big in England doesn't necessarily equate to America.
Right, okay.
And also, I think we might have been a bit before our time there. In the audience was Kiss, and they weren't known then, but they were watching us. And I know they speak openly about us. Yeah. Gene Simmons looks about us kindly. But bands that actually been made it later were in the audience at that time.
Well, you see, you've influenced an awful lot of bands, haven't you? Oasis, The Clash, Second
No Doubt,
Views.
Yeah.
You know, what do you think they've actually picked up? Is it different elements for each different band? You know, you've just mentioned Kiss there.
Well, Noel Gallagher was on a special BBC thing about our lives, you know, the whole biography bit of us and everything. And they interviewed him, and he said, they just speak to me. I know what he means. And that's exactly what music did for me. Something speaks to you, sir. And I think we spoke to people, really.
Right.
It's a good lie, because it wasn't about a study of it. It was about, does it do anything for me?
Yeah.
How do I react? And I think with us, we seem to, I mean, when you think of East Bloc countries like Russia, who don't speak English necessarily, but we obviously spoke big time to them, because they love the sound of us, but they love the image.
Yeah.
So it speaks to people. Yeah. And I think that's a good example, because it's not like you're sitting around thinking, how we're going to sell records, or what do you think everybody will like? When you're doing what we did, we were playing some extraordinarily odd material before we made it. And it certainly wasn't focused, except it was what we wanted to do. But our manager, Chas Chandler, spotted us and saw the potential as being so different because of the elements within the group, he said.
Sure.
And a lot of people couldn't see it at the time, but he did. And he worked on it with us.
It takes a talent to do that, doesn't it, really?
And we didn't write any songs then.
I'm enjoying it more now, though, with that kind of post time where you're
in. Because see, can't take it away. I'll give you an example. Shirley Bassey. Right. Now, Shirley Bassey is a great talent. Katie Tunstall wrote her a song. Gary Barlow wrote one. Right. What I mean from this is that Gary Barlow was nervous about sending the song with him singing it. So he said, can I play the song to a person and I'll sing it to her? Probably big. Gary Barlow said, at the end of the day, he's dealing with a legend of a person. And he, you know, although Gary's been very successful, I'd recognise everything he's saying. That when you have the effect of something which has really worked, like we did, that people refer to you as legends, that doesn't go to my head in the sense of that I'm better than others. It's more the point of us speaking to people at a very poignant time in their lives, whereas they don't forget it. They mature and get married and have kids and all the rest of it, but they don't actually get a particular something that took place, like we all remember, oh, do you remember that record player, or do you remember the youth centre? Those sort of memories, which we haven't planned, you know, this to take place like it does now. So when we were, you know, as young as we were, I mean, and it would be over anyway, so. And the Beatles used to think that.
Yeah.
Like, people might be saying, what will you be doing when it's all over?
Yeah.
Oh, well, you know, I'm not quite sure, you know. We don't really know what we'll be doing, you know. Well, I wouldn't have been able to have said that at 60-odd that I'd be having this conversation.
Absolutely.
Because I don't know, really. It's just that I know that I feel like I'm a bit like Bruce Forsyth, you know. Why is he still doing what he's doing? Because that's what he does.
Because that's what you are. That's what you're good
at. You know, so a bit like Bruce, you know, I've trod the boards, you see.
Yeah, absolutely.
We call it, like vaudeville people, you know.
Yeah.
Still plodding on stages. And I've played some extraordinary places.
Yeah.
Without our original singer, probably made. I've played to more people since the band broke up and became what it is now than I played to before.
Mad, isn't it?
There's so many of them.
Yeah, that's worldwide. That's good.
And
long may it remain.
America, there's still something there for us.
I reckon.
I don't know whether it's...
You're going to have another crack at it. Yeah, I don't know.
You're building up to it. Yeah, it's not like kicking off when you're 20 odd. But I know there is interest and we have thought about it. And whether I just want to go over and just sniff it out.
Well,
because
why not? No, come on, another challenge for you.
Yeah, well, it is,
it's
yeah.
Like, you know,
it would be a challenge. And you don't give up on that one,
no,
you see.
No, you can't, can you, really?
I mean, if I didn't want to take a challenge, I wouldn't consider myself worthwhile doing this.
No.
But I think every night's a challenge because it's another audience.
Of course it is. You've got to win them over, haven't you?
Mm.
But look, thank you very much for speaking. Thank you very much.
Okay.
It's been absolutely wonderful.
Yeah, it's fine.
You've been listening to Listen again to this and other tales, go to cattails.co.uk.